Good morning. I hope you guys all had a wonderful Christmas season, a wonderful 2019 for that matter, and I'm looking forward to 2020. I'm going to get that water. Okay, I'm just going to jump in. So the beginning of our story takes place at the ending of another. The kingdom of Judah was on its last leg against the might of the Babylonian Empire, the big bad wolves of 600 BC. Common phrases back then would be, the Babylonians are coming, enemies from the north. That's what they would say. And with their chariots, their swords and arrows, they came, they saw, they conquered. Judah was just another victim. They would be another victim on their long list. King Nebuchadnezzar's army surrounded the walls of Jerusalem, the capital, and eventually King Jehoiakim just opened the doors. To him, defeat was better than starvation. So the king ransacked the city. He took their king, their people, their gold, and the sacred articles in the temple. Now, what Babylon would do with their defeated enemies is that they would exile them to other lands. And they would do this to suffocate, to smother their patriotism, maybe their identity and fighting spirit. It was a stroke of genius on part of the Babylonians and maybe why their kingdom endured for quite a bit. However, they would select from each people group the young, good-looking, and not dumb nobility from each tribe. And then they would enter them, they would employ them to their services. Now, in a way, we're exiles too. Are we not? We don't belong here. We belong with God. The kingdom of heaven, that's our homeland. That's our promised land. But that's not where we are. Instead, we're exiles, we're foreigners, we're strangers, we're immigrants. And this is the first of the two main points I want to make to you guys today. God's people are in Babylon. See, in the book of Revelation, Babylon becomes a symbol for any organization, any government against God. There have been many Babylons in history, and I suggest that we live in a Babylon today. Okay, wait, hold up, Mark, you lost me. You're telling me that Canada, the land of free healthcare and friendly beavers, is Babylon? How does that make any sense? Okay, in order to understand what I'm saying, just let's read through the text, okay? So I'm going to go through verses 3 to 7 again. The king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They would be trained for 3 years, and after that, they would enter the king's service. Thank you, projector screen. So among those who were chosen from Judah was Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. The chief official gave them new names to Daniel, to the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Okay, so they go to school, they get free books, really good food, their names change, and they're made into eunuchs. That is, they took away their manhood, as Ashpenaz literally means chief of eunuchs, and Isaiah predicts this. Okay, so why did they do this? What was the point? My friends, welcome to Babylon Brainwashing 101. Forget Hebrew, learn Aramaic, the language of the empire, right? Yes, sure, we know you have this Yahweh God, but He couldn't save you from the hands of our god, Marduk. Learn about him in our literature. He formed the known world from the spoils of victory, and we follow his esteemed pattern by plundering you. Behold, all of Yahweh's gold and goblets are in our temple. For though we didn't see his face, perhaps he cowers in fear. Learn of Chaldean divination, dream interpretation, and astrology. Therein lies true power. Is not the evidence in the empire? Become Babylon. Drink deep our wine and feed on our meat. We have mastered life. Your name is Daniel. Its meaning is nonsense. Bel protects. God is my judge. Why are you here then, in the Babylonian court? Let your name be Belteshazzar, which means Bel protects my life, because you are in the hands of our gods now. Marduk owns you, Nabu owns you, Bel owns you. Welcome to Babylon. So I don't know why Ashpenaz had a medieval evil accent, but it kind of felt right. So, guys, in a way, isn't this what our culture attempts? Our education and our media is brought to you by Babylon Brainwashing 101. A recent movie portrays Jesus as a homosexual. Ariana Grande tells us that God is a woman, or God could be anything you want. Believe anything you want, as long as you don't believe in Jesus. And if you do insist on believing in Jesus, please just keep it to yourselves. And also, they will actually make a direct attack. Their propaganda is a direct attack on the way God designed human nature and family. Under the banner of inclusiveness, they will say, you know, come exile, come foreigner, come immigrant, welcome to Canada. You are welcomed here. You are loved. And love has no boundaries. Let a man marry a woman, or a man with a man, or a woman with a woman, or have multiple partners, or if you love someone else, divorce. In fact, disregard marriage altogether. Love whoever, whenever. Love is love. Love yourself, but don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what's right or wrong. That's religious. We're past that, okay, boomer? It's 2020, okay? Murdering children is your unborn, is your human right. Changing your original gender is your human right. Be a gambler, be a glutton, be a pervert, be a workaholic, an alcoholic, it doesn't matter. Live your life. The highest virtue is pleasure. The only virtue is pleasure, and the only sin is accountability. We have mastered life. Is not the evidence in our success? Drink deep our culture. Now, for Judah and all Israel, when confronted with Babylon brainwashing, it seemed like there was just two options. One, they could rebel, you know, shun the unbeliever, just don't listen to anything that the Babylonians would say and rebel completely, which is what King Zedekiah after tried. Mind you, it didn't go well. He rather let his people starve than face defeat. Well documented are the horrors of that time. Or they could compromise. They could adopt Babylonian lifestyle and adopt their gods and live however. And it seemed like those were their only two options. And for us, the church today, it seems like those are our only two options. One, we could either rebel or separate, you know, once again, shun the unbeliever, raid the abortion clinic, but in doing so, we wouldn't really represent the love of Christ. Or we could compromise, we could assimilate, we could smell like them, smell like the world, talk like the world, act like the world, but in doing so, we wouldn't represent the truth of Christ. Neither really seems like a good option, and it seems like we're caught between a rock and a hard place. What should we do? Well, the prophet Jeremiah proposes a third way. And I'm going to read it to you. It says, I'm going to find it, Jeremiah chapter 29, if you want to read with me, 5-8, I'll just read it. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you will prosper too. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Do not let the prophets and diviners among you deceive you. Do not listen to the dreams they encourage you to have. Okay, so Jeremiah is saying, instead of rebelling or compromising, build homes and raise families the way God designed families to be, and even seek the well-being of the city. But don't listen to their folly. Live with them. Don't live like them. Don't separate. Don't assimilate. But be set apart. Be holy. Stand out. And if you need to, stand up. Stand up for what's right, even if you have to stand alone. The question then is, how do we do that? I mean, what does that look like? Daniel and his three friends would become a paradigm for us, a shining example of what it means to be set apart. Though they had a better opportunity than most to rebel and maybe stab the king behind his back, and though they had a better opportunity than most to compromise and bathe in Babylonian glory, they choose the third way. Okay? And let's learn from them. Verse 8, just the beginning. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. Daniel denies the king's food lest it defiles him. But why? Of all things, what's the point? We got to know why in order to gain insight. The reason isn't actually obvious. First off, this isn't the Daniel diet, okay? As some may sloppily handle scripture suggests, it's not telling us what to eat. You know, Mark, eat your broccoli. You know, Daniel was a vegetarian. You're like, no, that's not what the passage is saying. The Jews already had kosher laws. Meat was allowed. Okay, maybe it was kosher laws. You know, no unclean meat allowed. That's detestable to the Lord. Problem solved, right? Not quite. First off, the passage never tells us the meat was unclean. The word defile is never associated with the kosher laws. And wine wasn't considered unclean for Jews. Okay, so if it's not vegetarianism, if it's not kosher laws, what is it? The NIV Application Bible has a good take on this. It says that it's a matter of glory. Daniel didn't want the spoils of glory to go to the king of Babylon, so he could say, I made Daniel wise. I brought him in. I taught him. I made him. Daniel wouldn't have that. It's very similar to Abraham in Genesis chapter 14 when the king of Sodom gave him all the spoils of war, and Abraham's like, no, I will not take this. I will not take a thread, a strap of sandal, so that you may never be able to say, I made Abraham rich. He wanted the glory to go to God. It's not kosher laws. And I stress this because no kosher laws means no rigid rules for us. Instead, flexibility. Let your Daniel fast be no Netflix or Disney Plus for 10 days so you can spend more time with God. Or let your Daniel fast be an obvious show of prayer at work. Not to appear religious, but to declare your faith in front of people. Or let it be, have a Bible study at work. Or invite a neighbor to church. It doesn't have to be your neighbor. It doesn't have to be Netflix. But it should be something. Flexibility. For those of you who don't know, we had a Christmas project. We wrapped boxes, and many of you guys donated, which was awesome, and we handed them out across the street to the government housing. They came to us. But not everyone came, so last week, me and Aaron went over, and the first door we knocked on was somebody I never met, but apparently he knew me. And he said, "Yeah, Forward Baptist, yeah, of course I know you guys. Marlene talks about you guys all the time. She always shares about you guys. Of course I know about you guys." And really, guys, I was blown away. I was blown away because it's simple stuff like that that God desires. That's something God can work with. And that's what we can do. It gives him room to work. Friends, these are not big things required of us. You can still get on with life. Daniel was doing a small thing, but he was giving God room to operate. No high stakes yet. Remember, chapter 1. And in some ways, I feel like we're living in chapter 1. What's required of us is small acts of faith for now. The Canadian government is getting more opposed to church policies, but we're not being thrown into the fiery furnace or anything. But if we're not faithful of the small things, how can we be faithful of the big things later? Be faithful now, and then maybe one day in chapter 2, 3, 4, and 5, we'll be walking out of the fiery furnace and out of the lion's den. Okay. So, now we know what Daniel does, but what does God do? I mean, if you think about it, what is God doing? Looks like God's doing nothing. His people were defeated, captured, exiled, being brainwashed. Where was he? Well, God was there. He was there. And behind a spiritual curtain, reality was he was there. Okay. Stay with me now. There's three references to God I hovered over. Verse 2, verse 9, verse 17. Each time God is referenced, so is the Hebrew word nathan. Literally, it means to give. The English translation doesn't capture this, but there's meant to be an echo. And I'll demonstrate, I'll show you. Verse 2, God gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Verse 9, God gave David favor in the sight of Ashpenaz. Verse 17, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds, etc., to the four young men. These three references of God are not necessary to the overall flow of the plot. That is, if we remove them, we would still understand the story without a hiccup. But with them, the spiritual curtain is pulled back, and we see what God is doing. And what we see is not a humbug like the Wizard of Oz, but a powerful, personal God. And this is the second main point I want to make today. The first main point was that God's people are in Babylon. The second main point I want to make is that God is in Babylon. Okay, so God is in Babylon, but what is he doing? The three references gives us insight. So let's look at the first, verse 2. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Take this in. It was not Nebuchadnezzar's might that gave Jerusalem to him. Rather, God gave it over. Prophesied long ago before Nebuchadnezzar had a beard, before he was born, Deuteronomy 28 said that if God's people were unfaithful, this would happen. 2 Samuel chapter 7 predicted this. Jeremiah again and again pronounced that this would happen. Babylon succeeded because God said so. Okay, Nebuchadnezzar, sure. We know that you may be king for now, but if God wanted, he could make you king of cows. And spoiler alert, he does. Okay? We may have to answer to Justin Trudeau, but Justin Trudeau answers to God. Now, I can't imagine why God allows this or that leader into power. I haven't walked in the shoes of people under the thumb of tyrants. I can't imagine their suffering. But consider this. Though God's people were in Babylon, so was God. Verse 2 continued. And the Lord delivered, yada, 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 the articles of the temple in the house of God. You get that? Think about it. God vacated his temple and went with his people into exile by choice. Despite Judah being at fault for sin, despite the inevitable mockery of the nations, God delivered himself to suffer the same disgrace, just to be with his people. Even when you are in the gloomy clouds of the night, or in the depths of despair, or in the dungeon of your own personal demons, God is with you. He's with you in Babylon. The second reference of God Nathan is in verse 9. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. Daniel finds favor with Ashpenaz. It doesn't immediately help, though. He won't risk his head angering Nebuchadnezzar, so he goes to the guard in charge of him instead. And he suggests, hey, let me eat vegetables and drink water for 10 days and evaluate me afterwards. And for some reasons we don't know, the guard let him. I don't know, maybe less meat and wine for Daniel meant more for him. Regardless, when you think of vegetables, when I think of spinach, I think of Popeye's impossible biceps. But that wasn't the point then. We expect, and the readers then expect, that this is not going to work. Meat makes muscle. Meat equals protein. This is not going to happen. But it does. And after 10 days, Daniel and his three friends are buffed. I don't know if they're buffed, but they look good, okay? They look nice, and everyone is impressed, and they let him go on with their diet. And the point is this. It's not said directly, but God is working quietly here. God is in Babylon, whether we know it or not. And God is working in your life, too. Even if you don't see a big neon sign, he's there, and he's undercover, super secret agent, and he's working in your life. He's there. The third reference of God is verse 17. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. After the three-year program, Daniel and his three friends graduate valedictorians of Babylon University. It's been a roller coaster ride of riches to rags to respected again. It's just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. But through the whole ordeal, they trusted in God. God is in Babylon, and he's our strength. I think what's most intriguing is verse 21. I'm going to read it. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. At first, that just looks like a passing footnote. What gives, whatever. But read between the lines. See what's happening. Daniel stayed there until the reign of King Cyrus. Oh, who's King Cyrus? He's the king of the Persians. Not the Babylonians, the Persians. Daniel stayed there so long that an empire came and gone. And guys, empires, Babylons, will rise and fall. But God's people remain. God's people will endure. And if Jesus Christ tarries in coming back, this new school curriculum we have in Canada might become a footnote in bad ideas. And even Canada might just cease to be a nation. And even if that's the case, God's people remain. God will sustain his people. And so, dear brothers and sisters, in short, we are not home. We are exiles in Babylon, and Babylon is against God. It is trying to brainwash us into forgetting about him, forgetting who you are. But don't try and rebel and separate, and don't compromise and assimilate, but be set apart, Christian. Have you lived your life this way? Do you stand out? What small things have you been doing? Make a New Year's resolution about one small thing you could be doing. And then one day, God will make you do a big thing. God's with you. He's in Babylon. He's in control. And he's working for the good of whether we know it or not. So trust him. He is our strength. Babylon will fall. God's people will remain. God always stands by his people. Nothing will change that. His love is a true love. And there was a day when Jesus exiled himself from heaven into Babylon. And though he was in the world did not recognize him, but saw him as a foreigner, a stranger, and an immigrant. Little did they know he was their king, their true king. And he would never let them go hungry. He sought the good of the city and prayed for them. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding, many found him 10 times better than the religious leaders. But when he stood against the sins of the religious leaders, the Pharisees, they despised him. And with blind rage, they encircled him like a pack of lions, seized him, and took him outside the walls of Jerusalem. And they crucified him. And the judgment of all sin was thrusted on him, the furnace of all hell. And the people mocked him. And all hope seemed lost. Little did they know, behind the spiritual curtain, reality was Jesus gave himself to suffer disgrace. Jesus gave himself to be crucified. Jesus gave himself up for us. And on that cross, he reigned as king. And he conquered sin and death once and for all. And he opened the heavenly gates so that any who would follow him can return home from exile to God. And so, friends, my question is this. If you have not accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, I urge you, do so today. Make him your King and Redeemer. Believe in Jesus and the things that he's done for you. He did it out of love. And Christian, I insist, do not keep it to yourself. Tell the world. Tell everyone that The Return of the King is the best movie of all time. It's the best story of all time, and that Jesus has arrived. People need to know. His name is Emmanuel. I would like to finish with the words of that old Christmas hymn. I'll say it. I won't sing it. I can't sing. O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appears. Rejoice, Rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. O come, thou dayspring, come and cheer our spirits by an advent here. Disperse the gloomy clouds of night, and death's dark shadows be put to flight. Rejoice.